Well, she came over. Her son is graduating from high school, and she asked me to cook her the dinner for his graduation party because I'm sort of a gourmet chef as a hobby.
Excellent.
And I thought that would be a good time to hit her with a joint venture. So I told her, I said, what I do is I work with small to medium-sized businesses and help them explode their profits, and I know you are helping them with the collection end. And when I work with your clients, obviously they are going to grow. They will probably encounter a few collection problems, which will mean that your business will grow as well. So you'll be doing a favor for your clients, and you'll also be doing a favor for yourself in the long run.
Now, you tell me why you have to make that more complicated than it already is.
No, it's not.
Exactly.
It's not.
And if you went to every single prospective JV partner and put it exactly that way,
perfect.
Uh-huh. You don't need to change it. The more simplified you can make things, the less it can go wrong. And when they do go wrong, it's simple to fix.
Dave, how about when you're talking to your clients? I mean, if you start talking to your clients with hidden marketing assets and leveraging and joint ventures, tell me about the language you're using so you're not talking over their head. Do you make it a point to talk very simply and not use...
If you think that they're at the level that they can understand that language, you talk to them using that language, leverage, hidden marketing assets. When somebody asks me, one of my clients, what am I actually focusing on, I just say I'm focusing on three things. Getting you more customers, getting those customers to buy more, and getting those customers to come back more often. Simple as that. And how do I do that? I'm just using stuff that's already in your business, and just to get more out of it. That's really what leverage is. But the thing about it is you have to find a level. Now, let me qualify this. If you speak to somebody in simple terms who's above that, at a higher level, it's going to come across to them that you think they're not intelligent. If you speak to somebody at a higher level who's not, they won't get you. So, again, it's kind of an intuition call. Again, it's building the relationship and finding the level that they're at. Does that make sense? Does anybody have any questions on that? Because it's a really important point.
Paul, you got anything else?
That was mainly it. But I'll say, Dave, I admire your success and what you've done. I'd emailed Michael yesterday that you sort of lit a fire under my ass. I've had some good successes with the HMA system. What I realized as I listened to your interviews, my approach has been rather tactical instead of strategic within the development of the HMA system. So I now have the wall barred and everything up and have mapped it out, and I'm looking at this much more strategically. And it's already
How's that working out for you?
It's yielding results, definitely.
Excellent.
I've already got, when I get off the phone with you, I'm getting on the phone with a local reporter who wants to do, I've already contacted them about PR and articles.
Excellent.
And I just finished a teleseminar with another marketing guru yesterday where that's going up on my site and his site. So
you're Paul Flood, are you?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I was on your site, Paul. Very good. Well done.
Thank you.
Very well done. Very well done. Very well thought out. Let me ask you a question. And it's a question I put out to all the HMA consultants who are on this call and those who are going to be listening to it. Who was your first client?
Well, I would like to say that was me.
Excellent.
That's why I'm doing that now. But now I'm my best client, my number one client right now. And going back to from Jay Abraham to Dan Kennedy, Michael Senoff to David Flannery.
Of course, because when you do it for yourself, and you go through the system for yourself and you see it works. Number one, any problems that you have understanding what you're doing will come out then, and you can fix that. And number two, when you see it's working for your own business, it gives you a lot more confidence to go to others and, like, be sure that it works and, like, show that when you're in front of a client.
Got a couple questions from a gentleman, HMA consultant out of the UK, Mark Waitley. And, Dave, he'd like to know more about how you're approaching the competitor analysis step in the USP project. How much and what type of information are you gathering? How are you gathering it via telephone, via the Internet, et cetera? He wants to know, are you producing a matrix? What type of price information are you getting? And the reason for asking this question is he's not sure if he's over-engineering it in the past. And clearly, to get through a volume of USP projects, any step that takes too long will kill your project timescales.
The way I did my competitor analysis is probably a way I won't be able to do again because of the high profile I've gotten since I did that. I actually walked into my customers' competitors and used them. got brochures, got their pricing. If they had an internet website, I went on the website and seen and saw what they were using. When he says he's over-engineering it, I mean, how deep do you really need to go for a competitor analysis? Do they have a USP? If they have a USP, is it integrated? If it is integrated, how is it integrated? What's the pricing structure? Do they offer a risk reversal? Just follow the system and see, do they have these things? Okay, service levels, pricing, USP, risk reversal. Anything that contacts with the customer, it needs to get information on. Any brochures they have, the website. And I did that by actually using my client's competitor's services. But I mean, I only went after three top competitors. It depends on how many competitors he's looking at and how deep he's going. But to answer that fully, I'd have to actually speak with him and have a conversation with him. But I don't want to do him an injustice by kind of giving generalities. That's what I would look for, and that's what I did look for. Just anything that contacts with the customer and ascertain then what you find competitors' contact material that your client doesn't have, and what does your client have that your competitor doesn't have. That's your way in for your client.
Okay, let me move on to another question from Tim Johnson out of Australia. What accumulated knowledge, experience did you have prior to HMA that's been beneficial to your current HMA consulting experience? In what specific books, seminars, trainings have you been involved in this knowledge acquisition? And what of these resources was most beneficial to prospective HMA consultants?
Probably the most beneficial is working with people, forming relationships, and how to read people. That comes just as experience. My God, books, I mean, at the last count, which was about 8 months ago, I had like 700 books in my library, business books.
What specific techniques are you using to position yourself as the expert, and how can current HMA consultants learn and apply what you're doing? Experience, mental attitude, self-belief, confidence, reframing.
Okay, my attitude is action. Just action, action, action. Just get it done. Just do it. Deal with the problems. Don't bitch about them, because if you do bitch about them, that's what your life will become. Position. How do I position myself as an expert? I position myself as an expert to my marketplace by doing the following. Column, my radio show, magazine articles, and just flood the marketplace with information for free. Give it away, and it will come back tenfold to you. My mental attitude, always positive. Do I get down sometimes? Of course I do. I'm only a human being. Everybody gets down. The thing about it is getting back up. Many of the time I was knocked down in the ring, I could have stayed down, got beaten, didn't, got up and won every single time. Knowing what you want, mapping out a roadmap to get to it, and follow the roadmap.
When you're identifying the USP, do you record the sessions?
I know if I was in a situation where I was a business owner and somebody who I haven't had a very long relationship with came into my office, stuck a recorder on the desk and started talking, I would clam up pretty quickly. The answer to the question is no, and I don't ever see myself doing that.
All right, Dave,
yeah.
If you don't mind, let's go through a couple more of your clients. We talked about the vet and grooming clinic.
Sure.
Their USP. What was the retail store?
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
The store is a designer outlet that's been in Casper since about 1991. I actually used that as the USP. The experts for designer clothes since 1991, mainly because the only thing that they were selling themselves on or can't sell themselves on is price and the fact that the clothes are designer. I didn't want to go down the price road because that makes them a commodity, so the only other thing that I really had going for them was their length of time in business, and that's directly taken from Differentia Dai, where time and service can be a differentiator. So what I did was I actually combined both designer clothes and time in service. Now, the only thing that USP shows is my client was a commodity, because that's what came back from the customer service. I said, well, why do you use my client? Because you get designer clothes cheap. And that came back. And sometimes a customer survey can show you where not to go, as in commodity. Now, if I'd said designer clothes at low cost, yeah, that would have worked. Another designer outlet store came, opened up, and was selling at a cheaper cost. And it's very hard then to go back and change a USP because people already have the original USP already in their mind. Does that make sense to you? That was a call on my own behalf. from my own study.
How did you integrate that?
Again, it's just the sales system. You see, what you have to understand, these are retailers. They're not salespeople. So when somebody comes into the shop, they let people walk around. They don't help them. They didn't happen to buy. So, I mean, they didn't have the shop attendants, didn't have business cards, didn't have name tags. We put it on under the sign. When you talk about integration, you're talking about the sales process. The sales process is about customer contact. A business card, a brochure, a leaflet, a PR, a press release, an ad, be it radio or paper. Anytime that something is contacting the customer, that's where you put your USP.
Can you tell me about the sales training you put on for the staff?
Sure. I mean, it's the exact same sales training that's in the manual.
Okay.
The exact same. For the designer outlet, I actually did it in the store after hours, just locked the door, moved a couple of the racks back, and just had at it. Photocopied out the sales training, and it took about 2 hours. Now, it's not a static process. As regards the sales process, are people finding okay? Are people finding difficulties? Do I need to go back on some things? And there are some things you are going to go back on, because these people weren't salespeople. They were just order takers. The difference between an order taker and a salesperson is an order taker lets the person make the decision on their own. A salesperson helps the person make the decision.
Did they have a sales process in place at this store?
No.
You established and defined for them what their sales process was?
Exactly. As in, what happens when somebody comes into the store? What the salesperson has to do? What the salesperson says? What the salesperson says about the store while they're talking to the person. When the salesperson is talking to a customer, make sure there's three or five things that you want to say to that customer about the store. So they're not just selling, they're selling the store as well. As in length of time, we've been around since 1991. Get all the designer clothes from London and Paris. And those five things should be things that the client would like the customer to say about his store. And that becomes your sales conversation. So you're not just selling an item, you're selling the store.
It's the same every time?
Same every time, because every customer is going to be different. When you get a return customer, the salespeople should know that person's a return customer. So they know they don't need to do the sales, they've already done that. So what they're doing, get into then, is building the relationship.
What kind of results has your retail client got, the one we just spoke about?
My retail client's up 40%.
Wow, that's great. And where do you feel the most of that has come from? Just from
sales training? Yeah, integration of USP and sales training.
See the salespeople doing different now that they didn't do before?
Selling. So I don't mean to be so blunt, but again, it's the difference between being an order taker and being a salesperson. If you go into a situation where your client's people are just standing around when a client comes in and letting the client browse around, and yes, I know browsing where else and you allow them to browse, but if they're not helping the client find what they need, they're just order takers. They're not salespeople.
Okay.
Process in place where that they're helping the client, they seem to contact with the client, with the customer.
Okay. Did you put any incentives in place for the salespeople?
Something I looked at, but I didn't. To be honest, our rate, we have a 10 euro an hour minimum here in Ireland. No matter what a person does, you can't get paid less than 10 euros an hour.
What's the motivation for the salespeople to sell hard?
Keeping their jobs. You're going outside the purview now of... You're going into operations.
Yes.
Into the purview of operations there now. You have to, and yes, I mean, if I thought incentives would pass the mark there, I would definitely push them, but I know it won't with my clients because small businesses over here are just pushed with the 10 euro minimum. But don't stray into operation procedures. You have to make a distinction between your marketing, your purview is get more customers in, get them to buy more. Now, yes, getting to buy more means good salespeople, but I mean, rate of pay and commission, yes, if they were on 2 euros an hour or 3 euros an hour, I would say, well, look, you have to kind of give them commission, give them a bit of incentive. But, I mean, they're on nearly triple that. I think 10 euros an hour is about the same as about $18 an hour. Now, I don't actually know if that's a lot in the States, but it's quite a good wage over here. And you don't want to kind of make things hard for yourself. I mean, if the guy, at the end of the day, if you've made the recommendation and he doesn't follow it, well, then he doesn't follow the recommendation. You can only put your best argument forward, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and move on. If that's the linchpin that the whole agreement falls down on, well, then you say, well, look, I actually said to you that we needed this, and you went against it. You can only do what you can do, at the end of the day, you don't make the decisions. You only give the recommendations. If they don't want to follow your recommendations, well, they don't follow your recommendations.
What happens with this retail store when they get turnover, when they get different people? Are you going to be hired in to do another sales training?
That's actually a good question, something I didn't think about. I mean, you're putting this in place. I'm assuming that I will be called back in. The subject hasn't come up, to be honest. But I would assume that they would be looking to bring me back in for that sales training if it ever does happen.
Let's talk about a different client. What was the third one?
The third one is what's called a men's kind of grooming center. Haircuts and beard trims and things like that. Now, this is actually very easy. The USP was very, very easy. I was actually in, I think, the third or fourth customer, and I asked why they use it. And he said, well, they're good at what they do and they're world champions. What do you mean the world champions? I said, well, apparently there's a world championships of hairdressing and hair cutting and things like that that's held in Germany. And these guys had won it something like four times in a row. But all their trophies were at home. And they didn't have a sign up. And they didn't have anything to say that they were world champions. So basically what I did is I got them to bring in all the trophies, put up shelves, put it around, put a sign up saying, world class haircuts by world champions guaranteed. Nobody can beat that USB because nobody else can be a world champion. But these guys didn't see the value in that. They had all their trophies at home. So I just got them to bring the cabinets into the shop, which again makes for a great conversation. The big thing about these guys is that they have the customer trapped for however long it takes to cut their hair. But can you imagine the great bonding process that goes on in that situation? I mean, the customers aren't walking around. They don't come in and say to browse. They come in predisposed to buy what they want, which is a haircut or a wash or a beard trim or whatever it might be. They have that bonding process for whatever it takes, 20 minutes that it takes to cut the hair. What I did was got five things that they wanted to say during that conversation about the shop, about their service. Naturally, blend it in. It could be one specific thing. It could be two. It could be three. It could be 10. But you get that 10 out during the conversation, or 5 out during the conversation, or whatever it might be, based on the benefits of them, number one, using the services or products, and number two, coming back again, and why they should be the sole provider to that person.
And you're on step three with that company?
I am on step three with all my companies.
The barbershop, they're booked up?
They're just, these three guys are taking up most of my time because They're getting flooded at the moment. And the thing about it is, while it might be easy for, let's say, the clothes retailer to hire another salesperson, it's very hard for the vet to get another veterinarian in. It's very hard for salon to get a new hairdresser in or whatever it might be because it takes specialized training. Not that I'm going down the road. The last interview I gave or the last teleconference call I was in, talking to Richard, and I'm just ratcheting back everything now at the moment for these three guys. It's on a kind of a full stop at the moment until everything kind of evens out, because I don't want to take people on now and have this could be an aberration.
Have they raised their price?
No. I've had a conversation with these guys and all that on the cards, a price raise and that, but the thing about it is, because they didn't have so many customers before I came on and they do now, they're scared that if they do anything to kind of raise the price or whatever else, that they'll all go away. They're scared they'll lose the business if they start messing with it. So what I've done is I've actually just stopped everything for these three guys, because I want to make sure myself that it's not an aberration, that it's not just a kind of a blip in the system that's going to be here today and gone tomorrow, because I don't want these people taking people on and in 6 or 7 months have to let them off again. I don't want to be that consultant. I don't want to be that guy, you know. So for these two guys, I've stopped it, ratcheted it back, completely.
Where did most of the new business come from with that company?
Return business, people coming back. A lot of the business was walk-ins. It's not now because of the referral system, the risk reversal. A lot of the business still is walk-in, but a lot of it is return business because of the risk reversal and the sales process that's in place now. So what you're getting is, you're still getting the same amount of walk-in, but you've got a huge leap in the return. That's where the growth is. So they have to deal with the walk-in plus the return business as well. But I just want to make sure that it's not an aberration.
Okay. What's the sales process, the barbershop?
The sales process, the barbershop, is just bonding. They're in such a unique position. They have the client for as long as they want them, because they can slow up the haircut or they can slow down the haircut. You are going for a haircut, right? Spend the exact same amount of time doing the haircut. If it's busy, they get the haircut done in 10 minutes. If it's not busy, they take 20 minutes. They're in such a unique position. They are in charge of the amount of time you're sitting down in front of them. And that 20 minutes, they're asking questions, they're bonding, they're selling the business. And these guys can talk. I mean, these guys are natural. There's one guy there, and he's outselling me, no problem. He's just a natural charmer. Some people you just don't have to train. It's just a part of the natural psychology, the part of the natural makeup, you know.
You said you dumped two companies.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
What happened then was, with those two guys was, I was doing the customer survey, and I came across a lot of problems with the service. People were not happy, they were given out. Service wasn't great, or the product were crap, or whatever it might have been. And what happened was, it actually turned into an anti-USP. Any USP I would have come up with would have been shot down in flames by the amount of actual bad complaints that I was getting over the phone from customers. They're actually just speaking directly to the customers.
What did that company do?
It was a hardware store. I just went to them and I said, look, I'll finish out the customer survey for you, but I just want to let you know that you've got that there's a problem, that I won't be able to take you on as a client until you get these problems fixed. I'll finish out the customer survey for you. I'll give you some recommendations based on that customer survey, and I'll give you your money back. I did it as a free service to that customer for the following reason. That when they do get the problem sorted out, that the first person they're going to think about is me. Now, I didn't want to go into the operation side of it and the procurement side of it to see about the products and their operations and their service levels and whatever else it might be. I probably could have, but it's just too much work and it's outside my remit as a marketing consultant. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. What was the second company? What did they do?
It was the bowling alley.
What was the great complaint with the bowling alley?
Actually, hygiene was a huge one. Toilets and a lot of young people hang around out there. I just didn't want to get into it, to be honest with you. Like I said, it's hard enough dealing with people who are good at what they do and are doing what you ask them to do than people who have...
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
How many calls are you doing on an average USP?
That depends. I mean, now when I say calls as well, that can take the form of a survey in-shop, because a lot of your clients mightn't have a database and might be in the process of building one up. So you might have to actually do an in-store survey.
That's new. Haven't thought of that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. It's the same as asking a question in the store as asking them on the phone. You'll probably get a more honest answer in the store rather than over the phone, because a lot of people don't like fielding questions over the phone at night when they're just out of work and trying to watch the TV and whatever else. Get one of the staff to say, look, every fifth customer, whoever gets, can you ask them to fill this out? Takes 5 minutes. Get it like that. Get as many as you think you can get. If you've got 100 customers, I think you'd probably get a good overview. If you've got 50 customers, I think you'd probably get a good overview. And then less than 30, you're probably dodgy ground. So I'd say between 30 and 50 should give you a good overview of what's going on.
I mean, is that what you're doing with the telephone ones?
Yeah. Some of them were customer service in the shop as well. The exact same, as they were just writing their answers instead of talking. It's all about gathering information. It doesn't matter how you get it. It's just get it. I mean, you're going to go into a lot of places and you're going to look at, okay, I need to do a staff survey. Excellent. They all have staff. Fair enough. You do the staff survey. You do this business owner survey. Then you come, I'm going to do a customer survey, and you go to them and say, listen, give me all your details on your customers. And you do a customer survey, and they're going to say, what are you talking about? We don't do that, or we haven't got. It's okay when it's B2B. Do you know what I mean by B2B? Business to business. But it's different when the people are selling B2C, business to consumer, and don't have a database set up, because there's no such thing as an invoice from a customer when it's a cash transaction. So you're going to have to go into the store and set up a customer survey in store. I'm sure you've been a part of a customer survey somewhere. And I'll tell you what, for your own personal education, next time you get asked for an in-store survey, take the survey and see how they do it, and see can you apply that to your own business. It's information that's important, it's not how you get it. If they have a database, use the phone. If they don't have a database, print out your questions on a page and use it as an in-store survey. If you don't want to do it yourself, have some of the salespeople do it. If they don't want to do it at the counter, set up a separate table in the corner and just ask people over. Get the information. It's the information that's important. It's not the method about how you get it.
One of the questions I emailed was, when was the moment when you first knew results were happening for your clients?
And I remember reading your question, light bulb moment. I don't know what it was. I think I'm just too busy at the moment to have kind of a light bulb go off in my head. I'm just too focused on forward momentum to be kind of stopping and having to look around. which is probably a bad thing as well, because you do need to take stock of what's going on at the moment. I think if I had stopped for a couple of minutes and looked around, I would have seen the database problem come up a lot earlier. In my mind, anyway, there was no doubt that it was ever not going to be a success. I think you only get light bulb moments when you're not sure.
Anything in particular that gave you that confidence?
I just looked at what was there, and just bull-headed pig stubbornness, Irish pig-headedness.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to work, and I was going to make it work. And I think that's a good attitude to have, you know? I'm not saying, like, never know when to cut your losses, but I'm just saying don't cut them until they are losses. Pig-headed determination, sum up of my psychology.
You've made a lot of money in the last few months.
I have.
What are you doing with it? What's the win?
I am going to buy my house outright at the end of the year.
No, you're living in a house?
I'm living in a house, yeah.
And you're renting or...?
I'm renting at the moment, yeah, but I will have my own house this time next year without a mortgage. That's written down in my room in my office as my number one top goal. I will have that in probably February of next year, I would say. Do you want to know what the second one is? It's going to make you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
A 1993 Porsche, because I don't like the 2000 model. That's just kind of let you know where I am.
When are you going to have your Porsche?
Well, by the house in February, it'll probably be October of next year, maybe.
How much do you expect to make this year?
Would you believe, I haven't actually sat down and worked that out. I mean, probably about $750,000, I'd say.
Great, for your first year in HMA Consulting.
Yeah.
Great.
Let me give you a caveat. I have got off to an absolutely phenomenal start. There's no doubt about it. It's to sustain it is the problem. And that is something that I'm going to have to manage for the length of time that I'm in the HMA consulting business.
Mm-hmm.
And I would put that caveat out to everybody as well. No matter how well you start, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Start a marathon at a phenomenal pace, and 10 miles into it, you're dead. Or you're gasping for water and they're having an ambulance. Or you can start off at a pace, a flying start, get some distance between you and your competitors, and then pace yourself for the 26 miles and come in first. And that's the way I'm looking at it. Or a marathon, not a sprint.
Have you been through most of the audios and hard to find seminars?
Every single one of them, at least twice.
Right. That's great. What do you do while you listen to the audio?
Mind map.
Mind map.
Yeah. Do you know what a mind map is?
Nope.
A mind map is it's a form of note taking. You have your page, okay? And you have let's say the audio you're looking for you listen to is Brian Keith Bowles copywriting. Let's say you put a big circle in the middle of the page and you write Brian Keith Bowles CD, and you listen to the audio. And every time you come across a point that you think is relevant, you draw a spoke out from the central circle, make another circle, and put that point in. At the end of the CD, you have what's called a mind map of every important point you have. One point per circle.
It's a way of taking notes. Rather than with the way we went through school, you take it linear, going down the page, indenting. Okay. It's consistent with the way your brain works and organizes information. So it's a far better way of taking notes on what you hear, and it's easier to recall and understand it. You read it like the way your brain works. There's been a lot of research done on it. It's a real effective way for learning.
How many have you listened to?
All of them. Probably two or three times.
Excellent.
This really has been great. Dave, you've been very generous. And,
no problem,
and Rob, you too, with the idea. And, you know, when I hear ideas, I always jump at a chance for another good audio recording. And I got to thank you guys because you guys did it. You made it happen.
Appreciate it that anybody listened to this or, like, was on the call, if it would kind of email Michael, kind of give a kind of a rating of 1 to 10 or 1 to 5 as in content and presentation or just places where you think I could improve. Any help you could give me in that direction as how I can improve and things like that, I'd appreciate it. I just don't want to hear the good stuff. I want to hear the bad stuff and how you think I can improve on it.
You both very much. I appreciate it. Very encouraging, great information.
No problem, Rob. Best of luck with it. Even if you come up with other questions between now and sometime in the future, if you just want to shoot an email with them off to Mike, I'm sure you wouldn't mind forwarding them on to me if you want to talk to me. No problem.
Okay. Thanks.
No problem.
Yeah. Here's a special note for HMA consultants. I really want you to consider using me to create and develop audio content to help promote any of your clients who have an internet presence. Even if they don't have an internet presence and they have customers walking in the door, and we could hook them up with myself and sell them on the idea of me creating an internet audio infomercial, an interview that really outlines their key benefits of them, themselves, their personality, their unique selling proposition about their business, an intensive audio recording about that business to help leverage the business and promote them. Everyone listening to this right now was sold on the HMA system by my audio. I know it works, and I want to offer this to you as a service to help get those results for your client. An audio recording, digital audio recording, or a CD is extremely powerful and is a wonderful way to leverage and grow a business. So please consider that when you're talking to your client and you may be looking for a way to grow that business. Contact me and let's discuss the possibility of creating some audio content for some of your clients to get them additional growth. With your HMA consultant system, the new consultants have a $500 gift certificate towards audio services myself. If they want to develop or have a client who wants to develop a full-on product, they have $1,000 towards that product. And also, any consultant who refers audio recording services and businesses to me gets a one-time finder's fee of 20%. So keep it in mind, and I hope to hear from you about that. That's the end of our conference call with Dave Flannery. I hope this has been helpful to new and existing HMA consultants. I hope we've covered all the questions that were sent in. And I want to, again, thank Dave Flannery for taking the time to do this. And, Rob, I want to thank you for all your well-thought-out questions. So in about 2 weeks, we're going to have another conference call, and we're going to be tackling the subject of negotiation. So get ready. It's going to be a fun one. And, again, thanks for listening, and go out there and make it happen.